Well, Len, all the golf action seems to be happening down in your neck of the woods in the Sunshine State as the PGA Tour moves to the Florida Swing from the West Coast. And I know that you've been at this week's PGA Tour stop, the Honda Classic, over on the other coast now for you. But you're in the middle of the tour, and golf is rolling back in Florida.
Yeah, this is an exciting period. They were at the Honda at PGA National for the first round, yesterday's first round, and I knew that some work was being done over there, but what they did on that resort was just terrific. They had about $100 million upgrades to it, and I hadn't been there in a couple years. I did go there once to see this new short course that they were putting in that I wrote about, but I hadn't been there for the tournament itself, and boy, it was just in top-notch shape. It was a place that needed a little bit of updating, but it got a lot of it, and it was impressive to see it. The only thing that wasn't impressive was that some of our local players didn't play so well, but that happens once in a while.
You mentioned local players. I know Doug Gim had a great opening round of 68 on Thursday, but unfortunately Friday skyrocketed so poorly that it appears that he is going to miss the cut. Nick Hardy also having a terrible first 2 days. He is going to miss the cut. Some of the other local connection players also not doing so well. I believe Kevin Streelman might be making the cut, and of course Wilson staffer Gary Woodland in good shape after a second straight day under par. He's top 10 as of a few minutes ago, and that's always a good thing when he is your selected player in this week's ING Golf Fantasy Pool, like I did, taking him in his neck of the woods down there near the Honda Classic. Len, also in Florida, I know there's some other tournaments coming up. Bay Hill is out there, Arnold Palmer's place, and, you know, I saw some photos today on social media, and the PGA Tour is growing the rough there like it's the U.S. Open. These players are going to need some help finding that golf ball if they miss the fairway. It is pretty darn deep stuff.
Well, I tell you, I think it's a good thing that they are toughening up Bay Hill. That course was, that tournament would thrive because of the presence of Arnold Palmer. And once he passed on, the resort, I don't think the resort or the course or the tournament has been quite the same, although the PGA Tour is, you know, it's an invitational, so that makes it attractive for players to be there. It goes from Bay Hill, and then we go from there to the Players Championship at Ponte Vedra, and then wrap up the Florida Swing with the Valspar Championship in Palm Harbor. So these are three big weeks coming up after Honda. But what was kind of a disappointing thing here is that the Honda field wasn't as good as it could have been, and four players who are in the top 10 and live within 20 minutes of PGA National decided to take the week off. So that's been a story in the papers here. You know, we don't have Justin Thomas, we don't have Rory McIlroy, and we don't have Dustin Johnson. You know, those are really, really top guys, and it's too bad that I can understand their thinking. They've been on the West Coast for a while. They need to get a break somewhere, and the next three tournaments in Florida are all, have definite edges, maybe over the Honda, but still disappointing to not see them play in their hometown.
Well, they do all have to take a break at some point, and a lot of them did play last week at Riviera in the Genesis event, and I understand that Riviera was in incredible condition, according to numerous media reports, and I'm glad to hear that. New general manager there, Jim Richardson, who's also the president of the PGA of America, has been working with the team there to take that facility up another notch. I know they are hoping that they will be the host site for the Olympic golf venue when the Olympics get to town there 7 or 8 years or so from now. So I know that last weekend you also made it out on the Champions Tour, and you saw Mr. Tour Edge, Bernhard Langer, win again. He keeps winning. He's like a machine.
Well, you know, that was a really big event for Tour Edge. They were 1 and 2 with Langer and Tim Petrovic battling it out on Sunday, although Langer pretty well had things in control. He did win wire to wire. He went wire to wire. So great way for him to start another season where he's certainly a long way from ready to hang it up. He's 64 years old, but still pretty much, maybe at least arguably, the best player on the Champion Tour. It's he's a pleasure to watch and a real gentleman and a great credit to the game of golf.
Len, I don't know if you have this stat in front of you, but I understand he only needs a few more tournament victories on the Champions Tour to pass Hale Irwin for all-time amount of victories. And I believe I saw a quote from Bernhard somewhere saying that he'd like to get that done sooner than later.
Yeah, you know, he's in a great, great position to get it. I mean, it's a lot harder to win, I think, on the Champions Tour now than it was when Hale played. Hale won 45 times. The win on last week at the Chubb Classic for Longer was his 43rd. And the way he's playing, you got to think he's good for 2-3 more tournaments this year or next. And, you know, I know he's getting older, but Hale Irwin's record is definitely in jeopardy there.
Len, a lot of the talk this week and for the past few weeks seems to be the shootout now between the Saudi Golf Tour, headed up by Greg Norman, and the PGA Tour, and where the players can play or they can't play or which tour they're going to commit to. And, you know, I guess Greg Norman sent Commissioner Jay Monahan a letter yesterday and basically said, I hope your lawyers are lined up for a fight. And, you know, the whole saga here, in my opinion, seems to be getting a little old. I think a lot of people are ready to say, hey, we want to talk about the golf on the golf course and who's playing well and who's winning and stuff like that. And nobody right now seems to want to. At least the general public and the golf fans that you hear from on social media, everybody's kind of getting tired of the whole Saudi golf battle.
Yeah, you know, it's I'm tired of it too. I do take a little bit of a different approach to this, though, and I know I could well be in the minority here. There is a case here, I think, to be made that Phil Mickelson really caught all kinds of grief for his comments last week, some of which were inappropriate, but. Nonetheless, I don't like the PGA Tour does function somewhat in a bullying capacity on stuff like this. This tour that Greg Norman is trying to put together had a team concept to it. You know, it wasn't taking that many players. I don't see how it would have hurt the game of golf. I know a lot of the players feel they should have the opportunity. They're supposed to have the opportunity to be their own private contractors. And, you know, I have a feeling the legal action on this is going to be very spirited because I know that a lot of the top players have said they're going to just stick by the PGA Tour, which sounds fine and everything. But it's I've got some misgivings about the whole thing. It's not like I'm rah-rah Saudis, rah-rah this new concept, but to spice up the game. But I do see that don't see it as a big crime to have whether it's the Saudis or not. It is immaterial. But I don't see anything wrong with having a kind of a small separate competition going on right along the side of the PGA Tour events. Doesn't seem like a crime to me. I'll be interested in following this story. As it develops in the next few weeks, and it's going to have more ramifications, I'm sure.
Well, I think that the easy way to settle this whole thing would be as if Commissioner Monahan simply allowed, say, 10 PGA Tour members to play in any one of those events and give guys waivers for one or two events over on that tour. And tell the players that they can pick which ones they want to go to, and maybe 10 guys a week can go over there and play in different events. And if you're one of the first 10 in, you can go. Otherwise, not this time. Maybe next time. But there should be some kind of limited amount of releases that would let the players that have been invited to play over there go over and play. So we'll have to see what happens with that. Our Midwest guy, Mr. Iowa Zach Johnson, apparently this coming week will be named U.S. Ryder Cup captain for 2023 in Italy. It'll be interesting to see how Zach, who's been a vice captain the last couple of Cups, does with his own team.
I think it's going to be a great thing to have Zach as the captain. You know, and he's the way I see it, he's going to be going head to head with Luke Donald, from what I hear. Luke hasn't officially been named either. Zach will become official on Monday when the PGA of America holds a press conference at its headquarters right after the Honda tournament's over. You know, Zach has been, he's paid his dues. He was played on five Ryder Cup teams, and he's been a vice captain on the last two of them. So this won't be his first rodeo. I think he'll be a great choice. He's a popular player. He's, you know, from Iowa, he's one of our Midwest zone, a very popular guy in the Quad Cities with his work on the board, as well as his work as a player for the John Deere Classic. So I think Zach will be a real good captain. And I hope Luke is the captain of the other team, because I think that'd give us a real somewhat of a hometown flavor for the competition in 2023.
Yeah, Luke Donald has been mentioned, and he seems to be the front runner to become the European captain. I know there was a little buzz created this week when someone said that the golf course that the Ryder Cup will be played on in Italy in 2023, believe it or not, is only the 23rd ranked best golf course in the country. And you know, Italy has a fair amount of courses, not as many as we'd see in the United States or some of the UK countries. But apparently there's now some debate that if they're going to take the Ryder Cup to Italy, why did they take it to the course they did? Of course, as we all know, if you're going to host an event like that, you got to have the space for it. And, you know, for media, for tents and everything else, the whole big footprint that goes around a golf course like that, and maybe some of the better courses just didn't have the overall space or nearby hotels and things like that. But it'll be interesting to see what the players think when they spend a little more time on that golf course over in Italy.
Yeah, you know, I saw a lot of the literature and photos and reports on it at the PGA merchandise show of the Ryder Cup course, and I kind of share I have my reservations about it as well. It didn't look like the typical, it certainly didn't look like Whistling Straits or the courses that we've seen Ryder Cups played on in more recent years. So I think that's going to be a real topic once players start, go over there to get used to it, see what it looks like. I think we could be hearing some negative comments unless it's a ways off. A lot of work can be done on the course, but it didn't exactly pop out as a spectacular venue from what I'd seen at the PGA merchandise show when they were trying to promote it there.
One person who said some comments, and they came out apparently pretty wrong, and I know you touched on this, Phil Mickelson has sort of taken some fire for some of his comments. And, you know, here we are now, only about 60 days away or so from him defending his PGA championship. And you would have thought, of course, Phil has won the Masters, and now we're getting close to Masters week, just a little over a month away. And you thought it would have been a good time for Phil, and instead, it's almost like he's a guy in hiding right now, trying to save some face when he does reappear at the Masters and the PGA, and gets back out there playing golf again. But he also had a sponsor leave him that had been with him for a long time. What's your overall take on Phil Mickelson's comments? And a lot of people vilified him, and I don't know, did he have it coming? Did he not have it coming? There are some media that have looked at the big picture and said, well, you know, some of the stuff that Phil has done lately has forced the PGA Tour to put an extra $100 million on the table for the players to play for. And there's been some speculation that guys may not want to go play a Saudi tour with Phil, but they're certainly not unhappy with some of the things that he's done, which is going to help fatten their wallets over the year ahead.
Definitely. Yeah. Phil got a little carried away with promoting that Saudi concept. I mean, he, he's an older player who would be a very popular one to, you know, be the face of a tour like that. He went away with his tail between his legs. I mean, he caught more flack than I could have possibly imagined, especially from his fellow players. I've got to wonder how they could not have appreciated all the good things that Phil did to promote that tour over the last few years. And He's not dead yet. I mean, he's still going to be a factor in his title defense. He's going to be a factor on the Champions Tour, and it doesn't help that he's not playing here at all very much. He's trying to. He was very apologetic. I've got misgivings about this whole thing with him. I know that his language was a little overboard in pushing in being critical of the tour and being critical of Jay Monahan and accusing the PGA Tour of bullying and stuff like that, which I don't know that was necessary for him to go overboard like that. But, you know, you hate to see Phil Mickelson not playing right now. And, he's done a lot of good things. And I got to respect his ability and the fact that he has been always a good talker, interviewer for media situations for a lot of years.
When, and again, I know it's something you mentioned a little earlier in the podcast, but we have now started the Florida Swing, as they call it, the four tournaments or so that bounce around Florida for the PGA Tour. And from your point of view, my point of view is that the Florida Swing really starts to identify the players that are really geared up for the season. They're playing good golf. They're going to earn this year perhaps points or whatever they do to make the President's Cup team, which will be at Quail Hollow in the fall. Also, players that are going to be well up on the points column in the FedEx Cup for the playoffs in August. We really start to see who's ready for the year, who's playing well. And I think the Florida Swing really identifies players that you're going to see have a good 2022.
Absolutely. This is the place to be for golf at this, this stage of the year. It's much better to watch this than you have the stuff you have out in the West Coast where guys are just kind of getting their feet wet. They've played some tournaments once they get here in Florida, and it's one tournament after the other, after the other, after the other, and three of them, the Honda, well, to me, the Honda's pretty big anyway. I like the Honda. It's always been, and until this year, it was the closest to where I was living. And it's a Jack Nicklaus course, and he's active in it, and it's big in that community. But these next three tournaments are all have a real big role in the PGA Tour. I mean, the Players Championship is pretty well considered the fifth major. And, once the Florida Swing is over, it all goes directly to the Masters. So, you can learn a lot about the whole tour by what's happening, what's going to happen in these next 4 weeks in Florida.
Well, Len, I've had one opportunity to play this week's golf course, the Challenger course there at PGA National Resort. And the bear trap holes, pretty interesting. I was sailing along at one under par on the back nine after a birdie right before I got to the trap, and then I got trapped in the trap. So I think played the next the trap holes, four over par through all three of them. But what's your take on those bear trap holes, and how tough are they even for the professionals?
Yeah, they're tough for any player. They're really good holes. I mean, one's a par. They bring water in. I think that's more than anything. It brings water into play very strategically in some spots there, and that's, I think, what gets everybody's attention. There's a great dogleg right par four that requires two very good shots to get there. The par three in there is very good as well. And its place in the right rotation is good, because probably the easiest hole on the Challenger is at number 18, and right after the bear trap, which is 15, 16, and 17. So it's a good place. If tournaments have been won and lost on the bear trap for years and years, and this one will probably be the same scenario, because the finishing hole is, a hole can be a birdie hole. It's not like it's a bad finishing hole, but it seems to me kind of anticlimactic after they get through three holes of the bear trap.
Most of us in the Chicago area today woke up and found about 4 inches of snow on the ground outside. And I know that the sun is out, and while we woke up and it was 14 degrees early this morning, it's up to 30 now. And with the sun out, The melt-off has started the entire next week. Temperatures are supposed to be mid-30s to mid-40s with the sun out every day. And I assume that if we get through a couple days, the snow we got yesterday that covered up our greenish-brownish grass outside will be gone in a few days. And I know that some of the courses are already starting to think when they can get open in mid to late March. And I know the golfers are chomping at the bit to get back outside, but it's always kind of a good time of year when you know the local courses, especially the ones up here in Illinois that you and I played together for so many years, are getting close to opening day.
Yeah, you know, I always was able, I can't think of one year back in Chicago when I couldn't play in March. And that was something you could really look forward to. I mean, sometimes it was late March, but always seemed like you could always get a round in, and now the season has begun. And, you know, you weren't playing in the greatest of conditions, obviously. It was cold, it was windy, the courses weren't really in good shape or anything, but it was exciting to be able to get out there and play again. And I hope it comes sooner than later for you guys back there. I'm looking outside my window on a gorgeous day here in Florida, and there are lots of people have been trying to come to Florida to do just what I've been doing a lot here, and that's play some golf. But it's not going to be far off in Illinois. It'll be great when it starts there.
Well, normally this weekend, a lot of people would get the golf bug because they'd be over at the Donald Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont, touring around all the booths and maybe talking to some people about spring, summer, and fall golf trips. But unfortunately, again, for the second year in a row, it's become a virtual event. I give the CDGA credit for pulling together a virtual event with almost $80,000 in prizes from companies like Zero Friction and Tour Edge mostly involved. There's some free golf involved as well. But I know I was looking forward to getting over to Rosemont and walking the show this weekend. Unfortunately, any connection to the show will have to be done online.
Yeah, that's a shame that show. It's interesting to follow the golf shows that are going, you know, traditionals all around the country. And I think probably half of them, maybe a little less than half, have been able to be held in Midwestern and Eastern locations. But you always look on Chicago as one of the very major regional golf shows. And to miss it 2 years in a row, that's really a shame for everybody, because that was such an uplifting thing when you would see it going on, when starting there. People would go there, and it gave them an early start to spring. And virtual, unfortunately, is a good thing, better substitute than nothing. But, you know, we all know it's not the real thing.
Well, I had the discussion on the show with our partner, Tim Cronin, over at the Illinois Golfer, and Tim suspects that it came down to the deadline, and there probably just wasn't enough boots getting sold for one reason or another, whether clubs didn't want to come down here and try to do business while wearing a mask. Maybe they were concerned about the actual turnout the show would have, or maybe some resorts are so well booked or sold out for most of the summer already, they wondered if they needed to spend the money to come down here. All interesting questions as to what was behind the cancellation of the show. But all I can say at this point is I hope in 2023, the Chicago Golf Show will be back in Rosemont. Len, speaking of upcoming events on the calendar, there's a whole lot of them now that are no more than 100 days out. The majors, in fact, are coming. We are just over 30 days to the Masters, or just over 60 days to the PGA, and 100 days out from the U.S. Women's Open at Pine Needles and Southern Pines there. And, of course, the men's U.S. Open, you know, falls in right behind it. We're getting close to major season, and even before that, the Players' Championship. So some of the exciting days of golf are right ahead already, and I'm still looking at snow outside.
Yeah, and we, I think, still looking for some victories by the usual powers that be. I mean, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, they haven't really been doing a whole lot yet. And but now it's the big time. The Masters is, of course, coming up close, you know, real quick, close. And I always pick Dustin Johnson in that one. He's only won it one time. I guess I'm giving him more credit than he's due on that. But that's my pick ahead of time for the first major. It's going to be a lot of good excitement coming up now. It's the Florida Swing here, of course, has captivated me and a lot of others around the country because it's a series of long-time good tournaments, and the Masters is coming up right after that. So we're really getting into the what is really the golf season, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Len, I do want to mention that this year's U.S. Open is at Brookline out at the Country Club, and that Southern Hills, that hosted the Senior PGA last year, will host the PGA Championship this year. Of course, the Masters always at Augusta National, and I believe we have the 150th Open Championship, or British Open, as some people call it, over at St. Andrews. So it should be exciting times with the majors starting to come into view here on the calendar. With that, Len, we will talk more next week about the world of golf, both here in town and down in Florida, where the tour is at. And hopefully next week here, with the snow expected to be gone and the temperatures in the mid to upper 40s, at least we'll start to see some of those outdoor practice facilities open, even if the courses aren't quite there yet. With that, have a great week.
You too, and we'll catch you next week.